Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Rachel Haneke-Brooking, who is the Group Operations Director at Build-to-Rent Specialist APO. Rachel is also a passionate advocate of gender diversity, and she speaks incredibly powerfully about how to embrace equality, diversity and inclusion into the property sector. She's also a trainer and an advisory panel member for PropertyMark, so a very busy lady. I actually heard Rachel speak at the Women in the State Agency conference, and ever since I've very much been looking forward to this podcast, and we are thrilled that she's decided to join us as a guest. So to get started, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today. Please give our listeners an introduction to Rachel. Tell us more about you and your current role with APO, if you can, please.
Thanks, Heidi. Thank you so much for inviting me today to come and chat to you guys. Well, you've kind of told everyone a little bit about me. You're right, I juggle a lot. I have a lot of balls flying around everywhere. I'm in a senior role within the build-to-rent sector, and additionally, as I said, I volunteer, I train for PropertyMark, I sit on their advisory panel. I also sit on a couple of steering groups for the Association of Rental Living, which is very centric towards the build-to-rent market. I have two young children, I have a dog, I have a cat. Luckily, the hamster has left us. I have a huge addiction to women's football, Formula One. I'm known as a top chef, and I'm a huge wine connoisseur. And especially on a sunny day like today, that's where I'll be heading after this. I think most importantly, and I think we're going to touch on this, is I'm also a really proud member of the LGBTQ community, being a gay woman, and I've only recently really started to talk about my experiences in that. In regards to APO, I sit on the executive team, and you know, together we lead the strategic direction of our business. And it's a business that is growing, and we have several sites around the country, which is our build-to-rent developments, and these sites are large developments. And if anyone who's listening today is wondering what is build-to-rent, because they're more in that conventional market, they're purpose-built properties, but they tend to be really large properties, big apartment blocks, and they've been specifically built and designed for rental living. They're professionally managed by one organisation rather than having pepper-potted individual landlords with different managing agents. They're normally owned by long-term investment houses, pension funds, investment houses, and they offer a whole load of amenities like Wi-Fi, gymnasiums, cinema rooms, work-from-home spaces, which is all included in the rent. And a lot of the locations are city-centric, so close to transport, really, really great locations. And as I said, everything that is designed and built to rent is focused on tenant use, parcel lockers, ease of getting around. So that's what I'm up to at the moment.
Excellent. I didn't go to university, Rachel, and I wish build-to-rent existed then when I was young, because actually I ended up working for an organisation that I used to say it was like being at university, but I got paid because it was fun and it was very vibrant and it was very big and it was very young. But if I had somewhere to live that was equally like that, that would have been brilliant. So I think it's fantastic for our young people kind of growing up in the UK as an opportunity to live, like, you know, in really lovely, like Rachel's actually sat in one now, everybody, really lovely places, aren't they?
They are, and you've touched a really poignant moment within build to rent. We're going through quite an evolution, and there's subsectors that are evolving. And so we have co-living, we have single family housing, which is more houses that are built to rent, and then the multi-family, which is kind of the main area, which is where anyone can come and live in these developments. And there is a really strong established student accommodation market. And just walking down from the station today, I passed some of the big towers, but we constantly get inquiries from students because they like the more personable, grown up and actually superior offering that Build to Rent offers. We get a lot of parents wanting to put their children into Build to Rent. So yeah, that's a really good point to make.
So when we attended the Women in Estate Agency Conference back in March, you spoke about your early life and your early career and how that's taken you on so many travels all around the world. At first with your family to follow your father's career and then later yourself working in kind of tourism and hospitality. Tell us a little bit about your journey, I suppose, to the property sector, how you came back to the UK and then how you started your career in property and how that evolved into the build to rent sector.
It's funny, it was like on the conference I had 20 minutes and with you I've probably got about 30 and I could probably fill about 5 hours, but everyone would be reaching for the off button on their laptops or phones. So I'll try and keep it as short as possible. But yeah, I'm very proud daughter of a ship's captain, a master mariner. And at the age of 6-7, when I was living in Hampshire, I was born in Winchester, my dad came home and said, guys, we're moving to Singapore. And so in the very, very early 80s, he moved us to Singapore. Later on, he moved us to America. And then he moved us to Australia. And at that stage, I was in my adulthood and making decisions for myself. It had a huge influence and impact on my life moving around the world because I was forced into adapting to change. To foreign environments, you know, going from a little town in Hampshire to Singapore, an Asian continent, you know, within the Asia continent with smells, with sounds. And I was so lucky because I went to Singapore before it's the Singapore it is today. So the Singapore River was filthy. You know, people were going to the toilet off their bum boats. The MRT wasn't built. It was being built because I saw the road collapse one day because they were building and tunneling under it. And also what I love about Singapore, and I actually try and go back every couple of years because I love it so much, is the diversity. There is no country in the world that so many religions and people can live together in one place and not have wars and fights and stuff like that. So Singapore really affected me. It also grew my ability to respect different cultures, from the Hindu, from you know, all the different, you know, religions and stuff like that. So it was fantastic. America, again, eye-opening, completely different to Singapore. I went to school there and, you know, saw just how people can believe in their country so much and be so loyal and actually be, you know, so dedicated to staying in their country as well. A lot of my friends had never left America. And then obviously I moved to Australia, which is, again, other side of the world. And I finished off my schooling there. So I was taken out at my teenage years from my GCSEs. Well, it was GCSEs then. I was just starting my first year of A-levels and I got taken out and moved to Australia. So that was quite a difficult time for me because, again, I hadn't had an opportunity to establish a lot of friends. I was always chopping and changing. I went to tens of schools. I moved homes countless times. We were living in hotels, we were living in apartments. It was a very interesting time and it definitely built my resilience and my ability to adapt for change.
I was going to ask about that, actually, about resilience, but we'll come back to it later. But did you find it easier to make friends over time, or, you know, because you had to do it so many times, or was it based on the situation and how people were to you?
It was always really difficult because I was always that person that had to come and join into long established relationships, children that had started at nursery, gone through primary, secondary. I always found it very hard. And I also found that if I made mistakes or I did something wrong, their tolerance was very low for me. I was disposable because I was just the person that, you know, had joined their group of friends. And so I did find school life very, very difficult. You didn't go to university and neither did I. And I would probably say that if I was to be psychoanalyzed by someone, they would turn around and say, Rachel, you probably didn't want to stay in that kind of education environment. You wanted to get out there and be who you were. But also when I lived in Australia, I was classed as an international student. So I had to pay an awful lot of money to go to university and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I didn't bother. But since then, I've self-taught taught myself and put myself through a lot of qualifications and stuff. So that's kind of, you know, my childhood. As I said, from Australia, I broke away from my family, so to say. That's where I got a job in far north tropical Queensland, you know, working up there, looking after AC/DC, Claudia Schiffer. You know, I had some pretty cool stories. Bill Clinton, I was the first one allowed in his villa after he left. So I stole all the stuff, and I've still at home got this little drink coaster that has the President of the United States on it in my photo album at home, which is brilliant. But yeah, I came back from Australia. I didn't get a visa to stay there permanently because I didn't go to university. So I decided to come back to the UK. I came back to the UK, and actually that's where I first started in property. I was a marketing assistant, and it was fab. They sacked their marketing manager, and they said, "Rachel, would you like to do it?" And I said, "Okay." So I ran down WH Smith, bought those yellow Marketing for Dummies books.
Yes.
Yeah, do you remember those?
Books for Dummies, yep. Those ones, yep. Yeah.
Sat down for a week, learnt it, went to work the next week, dropped a few really big, you know, special marketing words, and hey, I became a marketing manager in a property company, winging it for a developer. I knew I loved it, but I still hadn't got that itch from overseas. So I ended up going back overseas again. And then in 2002, 2003, I said, come on, you've got to start saving a pension. You know, we've got the wonderful NHS. Let's go home and give it another try. And so far, although I'm tempted constantly still for some glamorous overseas job where the sun is always shining, I'm still here. And that's where I kind of fell into property. And it was really exciting because there was a real forward thinking property organization that was looking for someone with a real customer centric approach, someone with hospitality experience to come and bring that to a very stale commercial office rental business. And, you know, I was successful and we had a great relationship. And in the end, they ended up giving me their residential property portfolio to look after as well, which is where I am today. And I worked as, you know, an asset management. I learned all aspects of the industry. As I said, I enrolled myself in the Property Mark ALA qualifications. I paid for it myself. I learned on the job. And I was there for a good 8-9 years, you know, and then as life does, gives us some twists and turns. I lost my mother to a brain tumor. And that was just a few months actually before the birth of my daughter, my beautiful girl. And that was really hard. So I decided to take a year out and just refresh myself before heading into High Street Agency with Hamptons, which was amazing.
You got to see some lovely properties.
Oh my goodness. I mean, you've heard of property porn, but this is really fantastic stuff. South London mansions, you know, they had wine cellars that I can only dream of. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. And I did 6 years with them, said I took a cold start branch to their most successful opening. And I moved my way up to an associate director. Again, always kind of sprinkling that little unique Rachel dust everywhere I rent, bringing all those experiences that I'd learned over the times and just making sure that I didn't kind of tunnel vision my way of operating or dealing with people to how sometimes you can do. And then after that, that's when I started into build to rent. I got headhunted. My old manager from Hamptons, who I'm still in touch with, and I think Hamptons and the entire team there are just absolutely phenomenal. I got headhunted and taken over to a borough builder. They wanted to in-house all their property management from, you know, external suppliers, and they wanted someone who could help them to input on design of buildings and spaces. And I did that for a couple of years. Then I moved over to Grainger PLC, the largest listed landlord. And when I started them, they had 9 build-to-rent buildings. By the time I finished, there was 19. I was a busy lady. If only they did air miles on trains. I was Newcastle, Southampton, Bristol, London, Sheffield, you know, all over. The team grew to hundreds from, you know, just in the tens. And, you know, as well as leading those operational teams, you know, I was helping on some of the strategic direction for a FTSE 250 business, which was great. And then nearly 2 years ago, I wanted a different change. I wanted to be able to go to a smaller business and again, help them grow, which is pretty much one of my areas of expertise is you know, growing businesses and putting them in that strategic direction and all the processes and hiring in senior managers to lead operations, which is what I do today, right now.
Fascinating journey. And I think it's really interesting. We were talking about it on last week's podcast, actually, that once you enter the property industry, you end up staying in it for a really long time. Most of us, don't we? We end up becoming quite, we have a kind of affiliation.
We become institutionalized.
Yeah, we do.
It's like being in the army. You know, when you jump out of it, you're like, oh my God, I'm a civilian.
Yeah. And what would the world be? I'm not sure. And I think when you're not in the property industry, it sounds really glamorous, doesn't it, as an outsider to be in the property industry. We know it's not really exactly like that, but I guess there's definitely worse things that we could all be doing. Okay, right. I'm going to go get the children to listen to this bit. 1 second. Okay, so I'm going to ask Rachel a couple of questions. You're going to have a listen and then we'll come on to your bit in a bit. Okay, guys? Okay. You spoke on stage really passionately at the Women in Estate Agency conference back in March, and it's fair to say that you could hear a pin drop in the room. And I imagine there's so much of your journey and experiences that led you to obviously where you are today. I wonder if you would share with us any part of your journey with our listeners to give them a little bit more insight into some of the things that were going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, when I was invited to speak at the Women in Estate Agency conference, I didn't realise how special that invite was. I thought I'd just be one of many people. And I think I fully agree with just how amazing that conference is, because I have been to hundreds of conferences and I've never walked away from a conference actually looking at myself and also how I can improve my business as a result. So if that's not a plug, I don't know what is, but it was absolutely amazing. What I spoke about for the benefit of people who are listening today is my journey, discovering and the difficulties I went through understanding that actually I was a gay woman and some of the unconscious bias that occurred throughout my life to date. And I'm sure there will be some more. I think the key message that I wanted to get across when I spoke at the conference is that it wasn't until in my late 20s that I actually found people that I could talk to, because I wanted to hide everything from everyone. I didn't want to tell anyone that I actually was, you know, had a girlfriend. I wanted everyone to think I had a boyfriend because I wanted to appear normal like everyone else. I didn't want to be different. And so I pretended. I suppose nowadays you use the word you mask, you hide behind a mask to be someone else. And it wasn't until I actually met people that would talk to me, that would listen to me, that wouldn't judge me. And remember, this is in my late 20s. It was then that I became a happy person, that I was like, you know what? I am normal. I'm absolutely fine. And after the conference, some people did come up and speak to me. And they said to me, wow, Rachel, you know, a lot of your experiences really hit home. I had one lady come up to me and said, well, actually, my upbringing was quite different and I was quite accepted. But that meant that they had people around them that supported them. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I lied so much in my younger years to hide who I really, really was.
And I suppose your passion then in terms of wanting to talk about it then and like you said at the time at the conference, you know, you hadn't even said some of the words out loud ever before, you know, so that was kind of, you know, really, that kind of took my breath away personally as a, you know, a really brave thing to do. But it was really important to you to share the journey, to educate people, to get people to think.
Yeah. And I will never say some of those words out in public ever again, because that's how special it was for me to stand up on that stage. And Liana, you know, who I think the world of, you know, I wanted to make sure that I shared what needed to be shared. It really interesting. A good friend of mine just last week showed me a post someone had written about someone who is a member of the gay community. And they were like, oh, for goodness sake, why are these people always talking about being gay? You know, no one ever talks about being heterosexual and stuff like that. And I just was quite flabbergasted at those comments, because actually, I know people who've wanted to end their life over the fact that they're gay and that there's no one to talk to and no one to understand them. And so I applaud anyone who has the braveness to actually come and speak out, because somewhere around this world, someone might hear the words I say, and that loneliness that I had when no one would listen to me, maybe they know that someone is out there and there is someone who is the same as them and who will listen to them. And so I don't want anyone to ever stop talking out about being gay, being straight, being of different colour, being a neurodiverse, being disabled, or, you know, it's important that we talk about these things. And I think that's, you know, just was so big for me in my journey.
Yeah, 100%. And the whole one of the key messages behind the conference and the reason the Women in State Agency came about in the first place is it's a very male dominated sector, and actually quite an old fashioned sector at times. And it can be quite off-putting and can definitely stifle diversity. I know you're passionate ensuring that people are employed equally on merit, which is something I 100% agree with. But we do need a level playing field, and that's obviously where EDI comes in. Can you share more about your experiences on the practical implementation of EDI, what we can all learn as employers, as leaders, and how it's really important to embed it properly and mean it rather than just play it lip service and not really do it justice?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And sadly, in EDI, we come under challenges with, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Yeah, you know, we'll give you the job. And there is, you know, real challenges. And it's very male dominated, especially in property. It's hugely male dominated. And even to this day, you know, I will go into events and it will be all men, and I'm at the corner of the room because they don't feel comfortable around me or talking to me. And all I want to be in there is talking to them and drinking with them, and invite me on the golf day, take me to the football.
Yeah,
I might be a woman, but I love football. You know, my surname is a famous West Ham footballer, for goodness sake. Can't you read that? You know, I think that that's really key. But as a business, and I gave some examples at the conference, is that as a business, you have to have clear policies and procedures in place, and you need to make sure that they remain relevant, that they're effective. You know, I've used the example of HR documents, you know, how I was applying for paternity leave and, you know, it was just all about male and female. And in this world now, there's lots of single mothers. You know, people are going and freezing eggs and having babies on their own because they haven't met anyone. You know, we are a different world nowadays, and we can't just be saying Mr. and Mrs. and stuff. Birth certificates, you know, is now parent one, parent two. So if the government can be inclusive, us in businesses have to be inclusive and think about that. I know there's a lot of talk at the moment about pronouns. And whilst I'm not particularly, you know, I don't focus on my pronouns or anything, it's very important to some people. So don't dismiss them, you know, accept them. We're all going to stumble over not calling someone a they. It's important, though, that we just acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you understand it. You've got things like, you know, again, some people get angry about people just putting a rainbow flag up for Pride Month and then taking it down. I understand that, but at least they're taking the step. And if you work for a company that puts a Pride flag up, you're probably going to ask, oh, why are we doing that, or what are we doing? And that's a part of that education process. I mean, when I was at Grainger, brilliant EDI, and we had talks on menopause. I learned so much about menopause. You saw all the men squirming on the Teams meeting. I loved it when they were talking about some risque things, which I won't talk about in front of the children. And I, you know, I went on a transgender briefing for young children, which I'd never thought about how it happens in schools. And I also went on a talk about how racism impacts young youth and stuff. So again, as a business, trying to think about how you can educate and stuff, and people surveys monitor your staff makeup. You know, I'm in charge of our HR within our business, and I know different cultural backgrounds and stuff, because that allows me, when, you know, we come to work in Christmas, you know, our staff members who are from the Muslim community, they don't mind working.
Yeah,
because it's not relevant to them. But when it's our, you know, Christmas, we have it off, and they can have, you know, Eid and Ramadan. And it's just so brilliant to be able to make sure you know who your workforce is, and make sure the messages come from the top.
Our head of people, she's a lady called Faustina. She's hugely passionate. She is from the Chinese community. And in our business this year, the whole business celebrated Chinese New Year for her. We paid for a big buffet lunch for everybody. She, you know, she got dressed up. She showed us Tai Chi. You know, the whole building was decorated, and she was so grateful. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But actually, everybody had a brilliant time. Everybody learned a little bit more about it too.
Yeah.
Like, there's always a win-win here, isn't there? It's not actually that the employer ever loses out.
No. And we have a yearly calendar that we go on. And we actually make sure we've written everything down. And it's brilliant, because I don't know the name of the website, but there's this website that you can actually download the national days. So on National Pizza Day, we order pizzas in. On National Donut Day, we have donuts. And we mix that. We disperse that in with the cultural activities and, you know, Black History Month and Pride Month and Lesbian Visibility Week, which I actually missed, which is horrific. I apologise. You know, it's really exciting to actually... And if you get everyone contributing to that type of calendar, that's another exercise where ETI yeah. culture is embedded within your business.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the very first time today, I have two of my children join us on the podcast, which they're a bit nervous about, but also quite excited about, I think. And the reason for that is I went to the Women in Property Conference, and I went to the Women in Property Conference because my friend and my colleague, Colleen, who I work with and have worked with a long time, said, I really think we should go to this. I think we'll get a lot out of it. And I said, OK, great, let's go along together. And we don't get to spend a huge amount of time together, just us as well. So I was looking forward to it. And I kind of turned up, I think, a little bit naively, not really totally understanding what it was about. It was an amazing conference, and it really does get you to look at yourself. But there was also... two speakers that day that really made me think and really stood out to me, which was a lady called Natalie and obviously Rachel, who we're talking to now. And that day ended up being a bit of a late day home. We got the train. By the time we got to the train, there was absolutely no seating. It was standing room only. We'd bought our dinner to eat on the train. There was absolutely no chance of that. And I couldn't really ring my husband. So by the time I got back to Peterborough Station, I rang him to say, right, I've just got in the car. It'll be half an hour, you know, before I'm back. How is everybody? How are the children? And he said, oh, how was your day? And I said, oh, do you know what? I've had an absolutely amazing day. And I had an amazing day because I didn't really expect to either. Not that I was not looking forward to it, but I didn't really have any expectations at all. And I started telling him the stories of both Rachel and Natalie. And the children... so Martha and Daisy here that are with us today were both there, and they listened. They were totally engrossed by the story. They had so many questions for me, of which I couldn't answer them all. I could relay the story the best I could, but it was very different. And we've talked about it. It helped us talk as a family about why it's really, really important that everybody is accepted. They're really lucky, actually, that they both go to a school that's actually a very small village school. There's huge diversity in that school. About 10% of the children have a disability, and there's lots of helpers in the school. So they've very much grown up with people being quite different. But they had a few questions that we thought we would ask Rachel, as somebody that's obviously had more difficult times in the past of being accepted. Okay, girls? So Daisy, do you want to...
If I see people saying unfair things, how should I react?
Brilliant question, and thank you for asking me that, because my daughter asked me that once as well. And I think the most important thing I want both of you to understand is don't be scared to speak up and say that you don't agree. That's fine. You need to be able to be strong in your thoughts and what you believe in. I think if the situation is difficult, though, what you need to do is walk away and seek a really trusted person, an adult or someone that you can then actually say someone was saying unfair things, and tell them what you saw and you heard so that they can help you.
I think you'll remember, girls, they have a cousin called Poppy, and you went to Inflator Nation once, didn't you? Do you remember?
I did.
And what happened?
But she has a younger brother as well, and there are these two boys that started being mean to him, and then Poppy stood up to them.
And really stood up to them. You know, she protects her little brother, but she wasn't having any of it, even though she was in a fairly risky situation, you know, in terms of, you know, they were bigger than her, they were definitely stronger than her, there was two of them. And you both came, you came home, didn't you? And you were really proud of her for doing that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. That was totally, totally the right thing to do, because you're going to hear a lot of unfair things. But believe in what you believe in, and don't be scared to call people out.
So if I think someone's being a bully, what is the best way to approach them about what they're saying?
Bullies. I think the first thing bit of advice I can give you is to understand what a bully is, because it's normally someone who's maybe had some problems in their life, or they're looking for a weakness. They want to make them feel better about themselves. I think that, you know, there is just so many reasons why people bully. I've been bullied. I said I was covered head to toe in eczema as a little girl, and I was constantly bleeding and cracked skin and stuff like that. And I was teased, and I was told to go out of the school because I was just not wanted. And so again, I think that the best way to do it is to educate those bullies, because a lot of them don't understand things. I speak to my children about this, you know, having a mum who's gay and them going to school and saying that they have two mums. Yeah. You know, my daughter's come home and said, I don't want to be gay, mummy, because the girls are saying I'm going to be gay because you're going to be gay. And I said, well, just go and talk to them and explain that's not how things happen. We're all different. We're all produced differently, different DNA. And so if you can do, again, the advice is speak to them, try and educate them. But definitely with bullies, and this is a big thing that your school would have told you, is that is definitely something you need to report to a teacher, to your parents, so that we can help that situation, because sometimes with bullies, that's what needs to happen. And I guarantee by telling us, yeah, doesn't mean that we're going to embarrass you and go down to school and show everyone that you told us. We're going to handle that situation really, really delicately and make sure that the education is put out there, rather than saying that, hey, you know, you're the ones who ratted, or what's the word, the terminology the youngsters use nowadays? Dob them in.
Snitch on them.
There we go. I knew it was something.
What advice would you give to someone who is struggling with who they are?
Well, I guarantee when your hormones start running around and puberty happens, that everyone will go through some kind of period of struggling with who they are. I think if I think about it from my situation of realizing that, you know, I was gay, it would have been fantastic for someone to be able, as I said, to talk to me, to, you know, someone to encourage me to go and join a community or a group of people, because nowadays it's so lucky. You've got youth gay groups, you've got gay sports groups, you've got phone lines that you can call and talk to, and parents are more aware of it. So I think that, you know, people who are struggling with who they are need to embrace their difference, and anyone who's their friend needs to embrace them and encourage them to know that they're not different, that they are just them, and that there is a whole community wanting to speak with them and help them through any thoughts that they have.
Do you think that's talked about enough in your schools?
Yeah, I think it is, because we do Christian values and British values, and we have to learn all how to do it and what you need to do them.
What about your school, Martha?
Yeah, well, we've had some days, and we have PSHE and stuff where they talk about it and everything.
You've had Culture Week?
Yeah.
Recently? What was that?
It's where like everyone could come to school, like dressed up as their culture, and there's like loads of different events kind of going on around school and like stands and stuff of like loads of different cultures.
Oh, that's brilliant. I mean, I know people who struggled because maybe they come from a really religious family and, you know, they don't want to be religious, or, you know, they're very proud to be, you know, very religious, but they go to school and they get teased and they're struggling. And you know, some people don't believe in the values of their family and they might struggle because they're different.
When someone is feeling sad, what is the best thing to say?
It's interesting because our first reaction, isn't it, when you see someone who looks sad, is you go up to them and you say, are you okay? And actually, the easiest thing for someone who is sad to say back to you is, yeah, I'm okay, I'm fine. So what I want you to promise me is, if you see one of your friends who's sad, I want you to make a bit of extra effort. And don't say, oh, you look sad. Just say, hey, how are you? Oh, listen, do you want to go and play over there in the playground? Or do you want to go and get a bubble tea? Or do you want to go and do something fun? And then whilst you're doing that kind of activity, turn around to them and say, I thought you looked a bit sad today. You know, what were you thinking about when this? Because what's happened is you've got them into an environment where they're comfortable, they're doing something fun. Yeah. And then when you ask them, are you sad, they're more likely to say, well, yeah, actually, I heard my parents fighting last night and it was really sad, or I failed my exam and I know I'm going to go home and tell my parents and they're going to go crazy at me. And so that's what my suggestion is. Too many people tell you they're OK when they're not. So try and change that situation and get the real truth from them.
And also, think how good it makes you feel when you're kind.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Okay. How does it feel when someone doesn't understand or accept you?
It really, really hurts. You feel rejected. You feel lonely. And it's just the worst feeling in the world. And that's exactly how I felt. And although in my day, people wouldn't know what was going on underneath me, because I felt that being gay, people didn't understand and accept me, I felt very alone and very, very, very sad. And so, you know, again, I'm just going to drum in that thing for you guys, is to drum that message to your friends that whatever they are, whoever they are, it's okay. And that you will stand by them, you know, really proud, and speak out like you've already done before to show people that you know, you fully stand by that person.
Can you recommend any books or resources for families?
You know what? There was this brilliant book that I used to read my kids when they were in nursery. And I can't remember the name of it, and it's going to frustrate me. But there was this book that kind of highlighted the difference in people. And I would love to buy every single nursery school or primary school this book, because you just flick through the book and it says, some people have tall parents, some people have short parents, some people only have one mummy, some people only have one daddy. It just kind of really reinforces in the most basic manner that families are made up of so many different things. I love that book. And I can safely say that, you know, that for a school environment is perfect. I think as you get older, there are some really, really, you know, emotive and understanding, you know, films that you can watch about our community and some of the hardship. And I think if and when you're old enough to watch those, I want you to always remember that we can never go back to the situations where, you know, people were just not cared about. So I'm sorry I don't name the name of that book, but I promise I will email your mum and yes. She'll be able to let you know. But that is the best book. It's about that families come in all shapes and sizes and colours and differences.
I think you're used to that, aren't you? You're from a big family that has its ups and downs for all of you, but everybody is just different.
Yeah.
If you had to go to school tomorrow and talk to your class, what would be the main things to tell them, do you think, about what you've learned today?
Don't judge someone.
Yeah. But
Like, just because someone's different, it doesn't mean, like, they should be treated differently.
Yeah. I think that's a really strong message, because just because you're a different colour and you sit down next to someone on a bus, it's not going to affect that person. Just because I'm gay, if I sit down next to someone on that bus, it's not going to affect them. Yeah, we are all people, and whoever we love or whatever colour or disability we have, it's not going to hurt anyone else just to love us and accept us.
So you need to spread the word, guys. That's your job. That's the next generation, you see. You're coming through. We have had an education as our generation. Things have changed a lot. Think back to great-granddad. His views on things would be quite different to ours. It's really important that we keep a totally open mind.
Yes.
And I'm really excited about your generation coming through, because I can already see the seeds of just so much more, acceptability. And there will always be that minority. But I think for the first time, when you guys become adults, we're going to see a majority of acceptance, especially in this country.
Yeah, I agree. OK, girls, thank you very much. What did you say to Rachel?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
OK, you can go have your dinner now. Thank you, Rachel, and thank you for taking the time to talk to the girls. It's such an inspiring session. It's definitely been one of my favourite pods, because I think it really means so much and everybody can take something away from today. But before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know that we always end every podcast by asking our guests for a funny story or anecdote. Do you have one for us?
Yeah, I'm going to share it from the hospitality industry. Because that was probably the best one. So I mentioned earlier that I worked in a big 5-star resort up in far north tropical Queensland in Australia. And I used to run the room service division, and we had the main hotel and then villas all outside of a golf course. And one night I was booked to host a barbecue for a very famous band called AC/DC, and apologies for the younger listeners. And so I had a golf buggy of barbecue stuff, and everything was really impressive. And we set up this amazing barbecue around the swimming pool. And they were typical rock stars, you know, having burgers and champagne and jumping into the swimming pool fully clothed and, you know, outrageous demands when I'm out in the middle of nowhere wanting an espresso coffee and yeah. I had to get it driven up and stuff like that. And everything was going really well. And then the chefs turned up, took away the barbecue and put this whole spread of desserts. And then all of a sudden I had my back turned. I was siding the table and I just heard this noise. And it was the sound of a sprinkler starting up. And we were on the edge of the golf course. And all of a sudden this sprinkler came over the whole buffet table, which was next to the swimming pool, and drowned all of the vanilla desserts, the ice cream and everything. And you had AC/DC screaming as the vanilla ice cream ran into the swimming pool.
Oh no!
Bits of mango and lychees and kiwi, they were going into the filters. It was absolutely horrific. And I just had to stand there. And I ran over and I put a cloth over the top of the sprinkler, and literally in 1 minute, everything turned into chaos. Yeah, that was a funny memory. I've got so many more, but that was one I wanted to share, that is just when things go really wrong, you can always save it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, thank you so much. For all of our listeners, to ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a review if you like what you hear. And I hope you enjoy listening to this one. And hopefully many of you might share it with your children too, to help the education through the generations ahead. Thank you very much for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.